Welcome to a brand new episode of the internet's most hated mafia-themed geek podcast, Lone Coat Mafia Podcast. It's I, the Reverend Godfather, the show's main host and frontman, and we are still on the road to Four State Comic-Con this April 30th and May 1st. And I know I promised you guys and gals out there kind of a quasi-episode a week up until Four State Comic-Con and new guests and everything else, but a lot of that is falling through, and I've been trying folks behind the scenes, but it's kind of hard to do. Not to mention we got something in that I have to rant, rave, and bitch about, and that is Tiny Tina's Wonderland. That's right, this about a month ago, this game came out. That's right, a month ago, and just 24 hours from this recording, the first DLC of Tiny Tina's Wonderland is coming out a month after the game. We'll get into that in a bit. What can I say about this game? It seemingly, even though it kind of, it's a fantasy game based on the Borderlands equivalent of Dungeons and Dragons called Bunkers and Badasses. It has a lot of faults to the game, as much as there's a lot of great stuff in the game in regards to it being fantasy-oriented, more so than it being a fantasy-type game as it is. It still has the looter-shooter type aspect, but as I said, there's a lot of problems in this game that they kind of copied and pasted over in regards from Borderlands 3 into this game. And that's a problem. Honestly, it is a problem. The graphics are great. The concept is great. A lot of things that they did with the overworld, yeah, that's awesome. That's great. You don't really have guns. You have crossbows and the ilk. You do have some guns in the game. But, yeah, there is an effort. They don't have grenades, but they do have spells, and they still have an action cooldown. But, again, with this game, they, in my opinion, they nerfed a lot. They really did. They nerfed so much in this game, and they've amped a lot of things up that was a could have been a problem with, and kind of was a problem with Borderlands 3. One of the problems that did happen, or I saw in Borderlands 3, is that if you cleared out an area and took one step, sometimes more enemies would spawn behind you without you knowing, and you'd get hit. This is even more of a problem. Instead of one or two enemies, you get 5, 10, 15 enemies, and these aren't just run-of-the-mill, ham and egger enemies that could be killed or shot in few shots and done away with. These are the upper-end enemies and minions that are there that the game provides. And a lot of these higher-end baddies that you fight are bullet sponges, or in this case, arrow sponges. And with the weapons being so drastically underpowered, it is like having, for those of you out there listening to this that have played the original Borderlands games, it feels like you're playing with those weapons at level 40 in this type of game. And, or I should say, you're playing with Borderlands 1 gear with Borderlands 2 and Borderlands 3 enemies that require something stronger. Literally. There are times that even with the basic ham and egger minions and enemies, they feel like bullet sponges in a way, because a lot of the guns, the assault rifles, the Uzis, feel like you're using a BB gun or a bits and pieces of a wet tissue and spitballs against these enemies. That's what it feels like. And not to mention, one of my biggest complaints about the pre-sequel when it came out is that at times, or I should say a bulk of the times in the pre-sequel, it felt like the game was forcing you to play with friends or other people. This has that issue personified. Not to mention with the level bosses being not just bullet sponges, uber bullet sponges, to be that aspect, you have the these bosses dishing out one or two hit kills. And instead of what was prevalent in a lot of the Borderlands games, I don't think I've seen it in the pre-sequel, but with Borderlands 2 and Borderlands 3, you had more so Borderlands 2 and Borderlands than you saw in the pre-sequel and 3. It's just that with the pre-sequel and the third game, actually Borderlands 3, you saw less minions that in that boss fight there with the boss. Now let me clarify that and give you a little bit of context. When you go down, or there's no aspect of direct dying in this game, it gives you a chance to prevent you from yourself from dying by having a mechanic called fight for your life. And if you do that, you get in the Borderlands games, you get a second wind. In this game, you get a death save. In essence, parroting the Dungeons & Dragons mechanic of death saves or death roll. Whereas you roll 3 times, anything over a 10, you get a death save. But in this game, a lot of the bigger bosses, when it comes to those bosses, there are aspects where those bosses take away the minions and do a one or two hit kill, and there's no way for you to come out of the fight for your life. Thus, the only way you could survive that boss fight is with friends. If you don't have any friends playing this game, or your friends don't want you, they're playing with other people or matching up with other people playing this game, where you jump into their game, they boot you out. Therefore, that's a problem. That's an issue. And what I'm getting at is that when they're making this game, when Gearbox is making this game, and they look at games like Dark Souls and Elden Rings, whatever it's called, and say, that's what we want to make, that is fucked up. You're not Elden Rings. You're not a platformer. You're not any of that. You are a looter shooter. That's all you are. Loot and shoot. If you want aspects of exploring, you want the people to explore, and yeah, that's fine. And if you're providing a higher end weapon or a chest with higher weapons in it, or hopefully higher weapons in it, then, well, yeah, put some platforming in it. Make the players get some work. To me, that's fine. I don't mind that. I know it sounds hypocritical, but to me, that's fine. That's dandy. Or if you get enough clues or certain aspect or certain challenge that requires platforming or a certain way to get to that item or that clue, then fine. That's optional. I can deal with that. I can ignore that. But to put it, okay, we're going to make this platforming aspect as part of the game. No, we don't really want that. But it's there. It's part of the game, and it's annoying. And the bullet sponges, two hit kills, and not to mention, ever since the first Borderlands, when it came out, the player base was awesome. It was great. It was very encouraging. Hey, we're all getting together. We're going to be going against this guy, this raid boss. We're going to give you some stuff to help you survive, too. Keep it. It's yours. Fun. We're out to have some fun. Let's do this. Now, with the sequel, Borderlands 3 and the prequel, and this series of games becoming more and more popular, the fan base is becoming more and more toxic. And that's a problem. And because Elden Ring's being a bigger game, not many people are coming to this game. And again, that's also an issue. Connectivity is a issue with this as well. So sometimes it's hard to tell whether or not the game you join is the people that you join up with boot you because they're waiting for their friend to join the game so they kick you out, or it's the game that kicked you out because it's a problem. As stated, a lot of the weapons seem very weak, very, very weak, to the point where you are, when the bosses are there, it's like you're just hand tossing stones at it at best. You're not doing any damage, not to mention a lot of these bosses are not just take away the shields, then take away the health. It's take away the shields, take away the health, do it all again because, hey, this is part of a fantasy game. Let's do it again. No. Or B, that particular boss will regain either the shields and or health. And that's very frustrating. That's very annoying. And especially when you combine it that a lot of, again, bullet sponge bosses, weak weapons, no minions in essence there to help mitigate things, makes everything frustrating and extremely aggravating. I know it's the same thing. It's rage inducing. And on the PS4 side of things, with Shift, they finally enabled crossplay. But again, I don't have any friends playing this game, and to connect with others is a pain in the ass. And there's also the encounter mechanic. You could say it's equivalent of the old school game Legend of Zelda 2. You wander off the path, you get a chance to get an encounter. Yes, these are great. These are wonderful for the aspect of gaining experience, the nooks and crannies to explore in the overworld, but these encounters are also there to fulfill mini quests in the overworld, which means you have a side quest in the overworld to go to something which triggers a encounter. These encounters are frustrating. If you die in one of these encounters, you have to start the encounter all over again, which means, again, unless you're playing with friends or a very high level or a very specific build, which at times you can only get if you are at a high level and or manage to have a drop, it's frustrating. It's a pain in the ass. The game encourages you to have your own style, but in order to do a couple of things, you have to do it in a specific way. It's going to turn people off. It's not going to have a replayability, and maybe that's why they are doing the DLC so soon after the launch, a month, where the DLC could be 2 months, 3 months out. The new DLC is a month out. Why is it a month out? Because if you're playing with friends or manage to have the right build, you could beat this game in under a week. That's it. And that's not counting the in-game after the story. Some people call it the post-game, which is the doing side quests, grinding for better loot, so forth and so on, or exploring the map where you didn't go before. Hey, that's what it's there for. But having a DLC drop so soon after the game, the launch, kind of says, hey, we want you to keep the game going. Yes, it extends the life of the game, but it can also say, we don't think the game is really all that it needs. Hey, this we need this DLC to launch now to say as an extra selling point. Not to mention, like the other past, or I should say, a mechanic they introduced in Borderlands 2 is the golden chest. And let me say this. With the Borderlands 2, the prequel, the Borderlands 3, and the Game of the Year edition all have golden chests in them. All these games get between 3 and 5 keys, either weekly, I say either seemingly daily or weekly. Yet, so far in the 4 weeks that this game has come out, we've gotten a total of 6 keys. Why does this worry me? Why am I bitching about this? Is because prior to this game's release, what Gearbox did is they took a previous DLC and made it a standalone game to help promote Tiny Tina's Wonderland. That DLC that they made a standalone game was the DLC introducing Bunkers and Badasses. It was called Bunkers and Badasses. Dragon is called Dragon's Keep or Bunkers and Badasses Dragon's Keep. So what they did was they took that DLC, they made it a standalone game, they included a chest, they included a lot of mechanics into it, but they only gave 3 keys for that game. 3! And that game came out like 5, I want to say at least 5 months prior to the game coming out. As a matter of fact, in January or February of this past year, in 2021, not 2021, in January or February of 2022, PlayStation Network made that standalone promotional game, in a way, or promotional segment, for free as a game of the month. Is that a good thing? Yes. Is making this DLC as a promotional standalone aspect a good thing? It allowed a lot of new people to experience Borderlands without buying the full Borderlands Handsome Jack Collection or the Game of the Year Edition or Borderlands 3. But since these games are routinely on sale for cheap, it is kind of sad that they had to do this. And they released 3 keys for the standalone game and forgot about it, brushed it under the rug. We could have used more. We could have used more keys for it. Extend the life of this. Let new fans be introduced to Dragon's Keep or the whole aspect of Bunkers and Badasses with Dragon's Keep. Hey, don't want to invest $60 in a brand new game? Here's something for $10. You play this. Here's a bunch of keys for it. But no, they didn't do that. It was like, no, sorry, we don't want to do that. What Dragon's Keep game? What Dragons? We didn't release no Dragon's Keep game. We don't know. We don't see it. And Gearbox and Randy Pitchford are acting like dicks about it. And it's sad. It's pathetic. They went from a company once Borderlands hit, became a success, became a fan favorite, and a standard in the looter shooter genre, to, hey, we saw the problems, what you loved, what you didn't like, what to improve on, and they made the sequel and the pre-sequel, in a way, great. Even though they kind of stumbled with the pre-sequel, it was still a decent game. But they decided, you know what? Fuck the fans. Literally, fuck the fans. Because that's what seemingly they said. Because starting with the third game, or I should say Borderlands 3, they decided, you know what? We're going to take the whole aspect of what Bungie is doing with Destiny and apply that with Borderlands and thus with Tiny Tina's Wonderland. I don't mean microtransaction or hiding stuff behind a paywall. No. They're, with Borderlands 3 and the rest of the Borderlands franchise, they haven't done any microtransactions yet. Not with Tiny Tina's Wonderland. They haven't done that yet. What I'm talking about is, hey, let's nerf weapons even more. No, 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 no. We want weapons that might be overpowered. We can understand if a gun is somehow dealing out a level 1 or level 2 gun is somehow dealing 100,000 points of damage. Yeah, fine, you want to adjust that. But to take the normal damage rate of guns and say, you know what, we're going to put it, take 50% away or 25% away. No, fans don't like that. We're having a tough time with the bosses as it is, playing it by ourselves. And you're taking that amount away? That's what Bungie was doing with Destiny. That when the players finding out, hey, Bungie's nerfing SMGs. That makes the shotguns better. Oh, Bungie's will see that, then nerf the shotguns. Then the players will go to the next type of weapon, the next, and the next, and the next, and cycle through, and it makes the guns unplayable and not worth playing the game, or tougher to play the game. Yes, I understand. Games are supposed to be tough. Elden Rings and Dark Souls are the epitome of these high-end, very tough games. I get it. But, here's the thing. From what I'm told from about Dark Souls and Elden Rings, the bosses, and everything else in regards to this, these games, there's a pattern to these bosses. That you might die a lot, and yes, that these aspects of these games that are tough. These games are meant to be tough, but there's patterns. There's a way. The game is kind of letting you know there's a specific way to this, or you have to think outside the box. Not something that is totally chaotic and kills you all the time. No, I understand where Elden Rings is coming from, Dark Souls is coming from, and why people enjoy it for that. And some of those players have said that. Yes, when the boss kills you 15 times, and you're just mashing buttons, there might be a problem. There has to be maybe a dodge or a pattern you have to look for before you attack. Yeah, I get that. I understand. Or you might have to change up. But when a game like this is doing something like what Mortal Kombat used to do, and that whole aspect, for those of you who don't know, what Mortal Kombat 2 and Mortal Kombat 3 used to do, I don't know if they still do it, is that the game would literally cheat and do moves or ignore moves that would pretty much work in their favor. That makes if this game or Borderlands is doing this or Gearbox is doing this for Borderlands, it's like I said in my last Borderlands rant episode, it makes things hard to play. It makes it hard to be a fan. But I'm playing with a friend who you probably heard the chimes coming from my system. He just got on. It is fun playing together, but it should be a option. It should make the game more fun, not more difficult in a single setting, and slightly less impossible in a multiplayer setting. So, and there's that. I wanted to so much do a catch-up episode. I might do kind of a brief catch-up episode next week. It's going to be going on about a lot of the stuff that's we kind of haven't talked about over the past couple of months that we should have talked about, but I wanted to hop on here and say my thoughts about this this game. So it's tough. It's a if you can, let me put it like this. If your local library has this game for your system, rent it. Literally, rent it. Or if it's on a type of PlayStation Now or a Xbox Live Game Pass type of ordeal, then get it from there and play it. See if you like it and buy it that way. Or if your friend has a desk copy of it, play it that way. But I don't recommend it unless it's on sale for super, super cheap, because it's going to frustrate the hell out of you. If you're a D&D fan, you might get some kicks out of this, because there's a lot of D&D-esque things in this. And plus, there's a lot of in-jokes. Like, I played one side quest that was a Witcher parody. There's other aspects that are different parodies of different games, like Mario. And there's a lot of... Let me just say this. I was playing with a friend of mine. He didn't really touch on Dragon's Keep. And I was helping him start up his game and help him play through the first few levels, the first few chapters of the game. And there was one aspect, he was kind of asking me, he's like, does anybody show up from the games in this, or is it something new? I said, yes, you're going to see a couple of people from the Atypical games in this. There's some touches and some lore in here that kind of makes reference to the previous games. Let me put it like this. Here's an upside. Even though I've been bashing it for the past 30 some odd minutes, close to 30 minutes, the celebrity, like Will Arnett and the rest of them, yeah, they did a wonderful job with their voices on this. And I thought that I'd be hating celebrity voice actors in this. No, I don't. They fit well. They didn't go too far, you know, can't be with it. It was perfect. They do wonderful jobs for it. I love that fact. So that's not an issue. Like I said, it's mainly with the gameplay and everything. It just hurts. And the copy and paste from 3, going back to what my friend experienced, he was rolling because the reference, I'll say here, there's a reference in Dragon's Keep where Mr. Torque gives you a quest to blow up the ocean. There is a nod to that in this game, and it is hysterical. He was literally, my buddy was, I heard him over the party chat laughing his ass off. And there was a lot of stuff that he was, that was, it had him rolling. Is there some woke aspects to this game? Very minor, it's not like it's in the main game. It's like maybe one or two side quests that might make reference to it, but it's very optional. If you get put off by it, you don't have to play them, but for the most part, it's a wonderful thing. The character creation is wonderful, very detailed. You can create, it's not, hey, here's four characters that you get to choose from, and that's what you're stuck with. This might be four classes you could play, but the characters you can make are very wide-ranging, and you can literally customize everything from the emotes to the face to scars, hair, type of armor that you're wearing, that what that armor looks like, everything. And one of the complaints my friend had in regards to that is that he didn't like the aspect of not only could you choose him, her, or he, him, she, her, but you could also choose they and them. He just felt very uncomfortable with that. That was his issue with it, but there's a lot of detailed with the character creation with it. And from what I'm told, if you create a second character, let's say you're playing, in essence, what can be considered a fighter character, and you want to switch it to a kind of a spell casting, a character that's primarily a spell caster, or goes heavily on the spell casting, then all the customizations you picked up in your first playthrough are carried over to the next character. That's wonderful. That's great. I still have yet to do that in regards to the that part of the game. Maybe I'll give some updates at some point. But for right now, like I said, there are things in it that I like. But there is still a lot of stuff too that is an issue and a problem. But I'm going to go from now. I'll see you guys in the next episode. Hopefully, I'll do one more episode prior to Four State Comic Con in Hagerstown, Maryland. I hope I get to see a lot of you out there. If you play Borderlands and play Tiny Tina's Wonderland, you can stop by the table. It's aisle I, table 11. Stop by. Tell us about Borderlands if you've been playing it. Tell us what you like, what you dislike. Heck, we might even record you and record your opinion and have that opinion be part of one of our episodes. So, hope to see you there. See you next episode. So, take care. I'm the Reverend Godfather, and I am out of here.
You've been listening to the Long Coat Mafia Podcast, the internet's most hated and mafia-themed geek podcast.